Eye on the Arctic. Views from the North. I'm Elish Quinn. Well, May 1st kicked off Mental Health Week across Canada. It's an annual event organized by the Canadian Mental Health Association to help decrease the stigma around mental health and raise awareness about the hurdles people face when trying to get help. But in Canada's remote northern communities, the obstacles to receiving mental health services are multiplied. And as part of Eye on the Arctic's coverage of Mental Health Week, we'll be checking in with communities in different parts of northern Canada to find out what's working, what isn't, and what the rest of the country needs to know about the challenges faced by northerners. In today's installment, we've turned our attention to the Inuit self-governing region of Nunatsiavut in the Atlantic Canadian province of Newfoundland and Labrador. And that's where we're joined today by Kyla DeBoer. She's the Director of Mental Wellness and Healing at Nunatsiavut's Department of Health and Social Development. And she's on the line today with us from Nain. Kyla DeBoer, hello.
Hi.
Now, what's the biggest challenges for Inuit accessing mental health services in Newfoundland and Labrador?
Right. I think I'm actually going to take it just one step back and start talking a little around a broader context around what challenges exist in mental wellness, because it really feeds into the aspects of what's impacting kind of the access to services. And really what we speak about over and over again are how social determinants of health and Inuit health are such grounding kind of underwriting aspects on understanding mental wellness in the region, as well as understanding access to services. ITK, or Inuit Taparit Kanatani, the national organization representing the four Inuit regions of Nunatsiavut, Nunavik, Nunavut, and Inuvialuit, speaks about the social determinants of Inuit health to be including livelihoods, income distribution, housing, personal safety and security, education, food security, availability of health services, the environment, quality of early childhood education, culture and language, and, of course, mental wellness. Understanding kind of the dynamics and the inequities of social determinants of health within Inuit regions and certainly within Nunatsiavut, it's really important to understanding both the challenges within mental wellness and more broadly the challenges of accessing health services.
And Kyla DeBoer, just to touch on something for our international listeners, you know, when we're talking about mental health, And you brought up the very important issue of the social determinants of health. And for a lot of our international listeners, hearing about challenges in terms of housing and food security, a lot of people outside have a view of Canada that maybe they have a hard time understanding why those would be issues. Could you just briefly explain for our international listeners why that plays into this the way it does in Canada?
Absolutely. So within northern regions, well, I'll speak a little bit to this particular community. The community I'm in right now, 71% of the population falls within the bottom half of the Canadian after-tax income distribution. So just starting out at understanding economic well-being around income, people are starting at a disadvantage. Then moving to look at what that means for housing, first of all, housing development costs are astronomically high within northern regions. When you're starting just with basic land development, which can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars just to develop the land, never mind build a home up, from that, there's quite a bottleneck just around the kind of the inaccessibility of the costs associated with housing. 49% of the homes in our region contain more than one family unit, and at least 24% of the homes are overcrowded with insufficient bedrooms and space for the number of people living within it. Further, many homes, about 3 out of 4 homes in the region, are in need of major or minor repairs. So people are often living in stressful and overcrowded situations, which, of course, is pretty serious impacts on people's mental wellness. If you're living in a tense environment around you, it's not comfortable to begin with. And then when you add in any other additional concerns around addictions or around abuse and violence, that also becomes a lot more complicated. When you're living in an overcrowded home, you're much more likely to be exposed to it from other people, or to kind of struggle with trying to overcome it when you have such a crowded space.
And so we've talked a little bit about some of these, the challenges. Is there any, you know, whether it's a government program or a community-based initiative somewhere in Nunatsiavut that you could point to that, that's showing promise in sort of helping overcome some of these obstacles or providing more long-term services in communities?
Absolutely. Since we're speaking about housing right now, we have the federal government had committed money around housing in the last budget, which we have a few different routes that are looking at doing that. One of the pieces has been doing some repairs within homes. We're also looking at establishing kind of sixplex units that will provide housing, and we're exploring exactly what model and who will be there. There's been conversations around housing for elders. There's been conversations around housing for vulnerable families. We've also established, with funding from the province, a supportive living program wherein we have either single or kind of multi-room units where individuals can move in. It has a housing first model, so you don't need to be anything at all, and you move in and it can be your permanent home for as long as you need it. They're usually staffed by one individual who's there constantly. Obviously, they work shift work, but you've got one person who's there and provides support. And it's designed for people with multiple and or complex needs and might not be in a place where they could live without that kind of support. But with that support, we've really, really seen people do much better. There's fewer emergency room visits around mental health concerns. There's a decrease in that kind of cycle of crime and criminality. People are going into the justice system less as a result of access. People are getting more stable, ongoing psychiatric care or mental health counseling or treatment services. People are starting to return back to school or get jobs, whatever is suitable for that individual. And we've got case managers who help coordinate that.
And which community is that in?
I think there's 28 tenants based in Goose Bay, and then we additionally have units in both Hopedale and Nain. Mm.
And this week is Mental Health Week across the country. You know, if for people that are listening to this outside of the North or in some of our listeners in other countries, what would be the one thing that you would want them to be aware of or think about in the context of this discussion of mental health this week when it comes to thinking about the obstacles Inuit face in terms of mental wellness in the North?
I think so much of it comes back to addressing social determinants health, addressing historical trauma, the impacts of colonialization, residential schools, relocation, etc., and kind of addressing the intergenerational impacts that has on people as they go forward in their life, that historical trauma continues in different forms of addictions and abuse, that healing takes a lot of time and needs to happen in a context that's also addressing poor social determinants of health.
And, you know, these issues come up in the media sort of cyclically. At certain times, politicians put a lot of emphasis on these issues, but they sort of come and flow. And if we think about even the conversations we're having this week, we still hear a lot of, you know, healthcare workers aren't in communities for long periods of time. The frustration a lot of people have with getting follow-through services when policies change or workers change or programs change. So change doesn't happen overnight. What advice would you give someone living in Nunatsiavut or another Arctic region of Canada who might be listening to this and who wants help but is overwhelmed by the obstacles? You know, what would you tell them, or where would you tell their families to start despite all the challenges that there are?
I think it really depends a little on what community you're speaking to. Different communities have different resources and have different strengths. I think on a national level, First Nations Inuit Health Branch has established the Hope and Hope for Wellness Mental Health Line, which anyone across Canada can call into, and they certainly have services in English and French, but I believe they're also increasingly touching on different Indigenous languages, including Inuktitut. Many provinces and I think some territories also have mental health support lines as well, which people can call in and help get support and kind of getting directed different ways. But also many communities do have different resources. Certainly, we do see some level of staff changeover, though some of our kind of internal Inatsiavut services actually have quite a good staff stability, and many of our staff have been there for 5-10 years and are well known within their community. And we're lucky that there has been more stability in some of our counselors based within the community, though that does still change more often than would be totally ideal. And then I think beyond that, it really does take persistence and advocacy at some points in time, and finding a service provider of some sort that's able to help help you with that. We've had one program that's been really successful called Family Connections, wherein vulnerable families are able to connect with a worker who really helps them navigate all the different systems of support that they might need, whether that's accessing mental health services of some sort, or if it's accessing more basic housing needs or advocacy and being involved within child protection systems or justice systems or things. Just having a support person who's able to help walk with you and just meet you wherever you are and go wherever you feel you need to be going. I do think one piece that's really, really important to stress and is often overlooked as we talk about concerns is really recognizing resilience and strength, whether that is in our Northern Indigenous communities or for anyone across Canada or internationally. I remember I once wrote a paper for my graduate program in kind of addressing trauma and resilience, and how much what my recognition was that much like looking into a night sky where it can look pitch black, if you look long enough, there it's so filled with stars. And that's how I approach mental wellness here, is that it's not my responsibility to light up the night sky. It's my responsibility to look into the sky and to see all of the stars of hope that are out there, and to really and truly believe that each individual is a star and is able to light up that night sky, and that we're not there to somehow light it up on their behalf.
Well, Kylie DeBoer, I think that's a wonderful place to stop. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.